Like the first time you try something with some super hot sauce on it, it's like miserable and you hate it. But if you like keep trying it, you kind of get acclimated to it. It's not as bad anymore, and you actually grow to like crave it, you know? And it's that intensity. Like sometimes you're eating a food like that's a little not even bland, but just you're like, I kind of want like a little kick right now, you know? And that's kind of what I think metal is. Like that's how I think it grows on people. It's so like shocking at first and intense. And maybe not pleasant for like the mainstream ear, but as you get into it more, it's like it becomes this kind of acquired taste, and nothing really matches that level of intensity after.
Welcome back to Labeled. I'm your host, Matt Carter, and today's conversation is with Trey Salaya. Now, Trey is in two popular metalcore bands, and given just how big metalcore is and has become, I thought it'd be really interesting to hear his perspective because he's not only a drummer, but a guitarist and a writer. Trey's the drummer now for Fit for a King, and he's also one of the primary writers and guitarists and producer for a band called Invent Animate, who, if you haven't heard of them yet, their newest album, Heavener, is doing really well, making waves now. So it's really interesting to me when people have multiple skills that they put together. I'm curious about their process and how it works. Curious about the genre. So it felt like there'd be some good stuff to learn from Trey and was eager to talk to him. And I think you will really like this conversation and their new music. So we'll get right to it. Let's do it. Invent Animate is, I guess, blown up or is blowing up or something like that. And I just want to just jump right in there and find out why. The band's been around for a long time, but what has been happening just immediately with this record? Why all of a sudden is it all over the place?
Dude, it's weird. I don't know. I think sometimes you kind of it's serendipitous, you know, like things kind of come together at the right time. I think we worked with the right people, and you know, we've never we've always kind of been a largely self-produced band. You know, everything was kind of in-house, so to speak, like with Keaton and I, the guitar player. Keaton and I are the main songwriters, and our dynamic has always been just sit down together, write some riffs, kind of build a song out of it, and it goes from there. And then we kind of add lyrics and vocals after that. But this time we realized that we weren't good at everything, and that we kind of needed help on some stuff, and that, you know, that's totally okay. Like, so our weak point, I think, would be, I won't say it's necessarily a weak point. Sometimes it's a matter of time and effort, and you're burnt out from, you know, like if we're writing instrumentals that take like, you know, it takes us a whole month to finish a song sometimes. Sometimes it's a lot quicker. Sometimes it's like a couple days, but like sometimes you get a little burnout and you don't have the energy for vocals or lyrics and stuff like that. So we kind of we partnered up with Landon Tours for this record. He's from The Plot in You. He's the singer, and he's a producer in his own right, and he works with bands and records and writes for bands. And he just really helped us on the vocal side of things. Just coming in with ideas like ready to go, and it kind of took a lot of the pressure and, you know, mental burden off of especially Keaton and I to just have room to like really dial in the instrumental stuff that we want to spend more time on, And then when we have the time to, like when we get to vocals, there's already an idea that's growing and in a good spot, you know, and we can kind of polish that and adapt it to our sound the best as we can. But so yeah, that was a big thing, was like getting help with vocals and just kind of having a producer come in when usually we're self-produced. And
I see. And
and
you
then
think
like,
that made a difference, that the self-producing gave rise to this album, which is just, Heavener is the new album, but did you know it was going to be big or different? Like, why all of a sudden, from the outside point of view, did everybody take notice?
man, that's another good question. I think it just I think everything we tried worked. Like we tried to really take a step back. You know, our last record, Grayview, there were times when we felt it came out right as the pandemic was happening. So like it was literally the same week when everything got shut down, so we didn't get to tour off of it really. Our last show of tour is the day it released. So I think there was a lot of pressure that it was basically like do or die, you know, like this album is a make or break for us, and we've got to kind of like appeal to people, and we got to appeal to the right crowds and get in the right tours and things like that. And I think we were kind of trying too hard. I think it's a good record and I'm proud of it, but there are definitely things I listen back on and think like that's, we were kind of trying to not be us there, you know. And then with the whole pandemic, to kind of just sit and reflect on that, it kind of brought us back to our roots a little bit, where we were just like, it's not really important. Like, it's more important to be authentic because people connect with that. Like, they're not connecting to what you think. Like, you're trying to kind of create and curate this group of moments that you think people will like. You know, it's kind of pandering to us at least. And we I think we just got in a spot where we felt a lot of pressure and we were trying too hard. And I don't know, we just like sat back and wrote, tried to write like fresh, interesting stuff, that things that kind of piqued our interest and things that made us happy and feel good and cool, and things that had replay value to us. And I don't know, I think the authenticity resonated more, and we just, I think we're able to craft like stronger songs, getting help like with Landon and outside perspectives. And I think the production has a lot to do with it too. I think Dan Bronstein kind of smashed the production. It's got huge guitars, and Marcus sounds so good, the singer on this record. And I think we were able to really highlight his voice as with as much care as we usually do, like the instrumentals and stuff, you know.
And did it just go right away on Spotify and just get picked up and put on the playlist? Is that where the success is driving? Like, where's the place where you notice, like, oh, this is working? Something's happening now.
There have been some playlists on Spotify that have definitely helped. What's interesting right now is like a lot of the plays of the band. I'm gonna get some of the terminology wrong, but like you can go in like the Spotify artist profile and kind of look at where your plays are coming from and how many are from playlist or like organic, people seeking out and stuff. And there is like an unprecedented level of like organic just listeners. So like You know, it like sometimes you'll get on a really good playlist and your monthly listeners will spike. But then whenever you inevitably come off of that playlist, they drop a whole bunch. That doesn't seem to be really happening with us because it seems like the playlists have kind of helped to a degree, but it's created like really organic interactions, I guess, and people are look seem like they're sticking with it. And I don't know. I guess it's like some word of mouth, some internet hype. Like I've seen it. It seems like it's on more people's radars than we're used to, you know? Like the fact that you're saying like it looks like it's blown up is kind of like weird to us because we've never been in that sphere, you know?
Yeah. So you're seeing it that like it's on it's peop it's word of mouth and whatever reason you say that it's not coming from the algorithmic part of Spotify's analytics. It says this people going to your page, which means they're typing in your name because they heard about it somewhere, somebody told them, they read about it, saw it somewhere else. But you know, and so I guess it could be, I just, you know, I'm not really sure, but it's like if it's a combination of social media or some other press or whatever it is, but that's a good in it's a, definitely a good thing that it's organic traffic and not just, oh, you got put on a playlist that can come and go. That's a scary thing. When you have success quickly, it's like, yeah, but can it be taken away quickly?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And this is our first record with our new label, UNFD from Australia. And they've definitely put together like a good rollout package for us and basically gave us all the tools we need to like help the release be what we wanted it to be. And that's a big part too, you know. Just having like the right teams and the right support, like our managers. Yeah, just like I said earlier, it's like I think we just found the right people for us, you know.
Awesome. Well, it's fascinating to me because I don't have the language for it yet, but you obviously come from a creative space, but you also do a lot of different things in the, you know, from guitar to drums to multiple bands to producing, and you know, all of those things. I try to get a handle on people. You already said maybe you're not so much a business or numbers guy, but you are in some sense a all-purpose or utility or multi skill sets that you bring together
Yeah,
to make the
jack of
things
all
happen.
trades, master of none, kind of a Swiss Army kind of guy. But yeah, I mean, I mean that all of that feels sort of accidental, you know. Like I grew up, I started playing guitar first when I was 12, and like really shortly after when I was 14, I thought drums were cool, so I picked up drums and started playing those, and I always kind of grew both. Like grew better at both evenly. I never really focused on one or chose one or the other. I liked them both a lot, so I just stuck with them. And that kind of led into, you know, the band starting in high school and just writing riffs. And I initially wanted to be the guitar player actually. But there were like no drummers where we lived. And so I just was like, okay, I'll just play drums. But because of that, I've kind of always had that like guitarist producer type of role, you know, like at home. Yeah, but so it feels like kind of just circumstantial almost that I like drum and invent, and because there's other tours and different things. Like before I joined Fit for a King, I was actually filling in on guitar for a while, and like I filled in on bass for the band Era at one point. And so I've just kind of done I just say yes to things, you know,
And just
like for
follow where that
better or
leads, yeah.
worse. Like sometimes it's, you know, sometimes it's a bad trait of mine, but it's hard for me to say no to a lot.
Yeah, well, it gives a different, you know, there's like there's a broad context that you have access to when you can do multiple skills. And the one of the main patterns I notice is just that there's people who are interested in all the maybe interdisciplinary or the context building, you know, all the way down from the level two in a song to the whole, you know, the whole thing with production and all the business and everything else. And then on the other end of the spectrum is the people sometimes that are just the star, like, and maybe not, or that just like only that are maybe the focus and they're purely expressive and comfortable being the focus or the star of something. And they usually lean more into one narrow skill. And that's not always the case. Sometimes the people that can be the star or the front of something also have multiple skills. But, you know, it is a really good compliment when you can get the pairing of that. Are you but you're not so much a spotlight guy.
No, I wouldn't say. I think because of like Invent Animate in particular has a really like a super emotionally invested and like loyal fan base, and because of that, I think a lot of people that are fans of the band do know me and like know my role in the band and know that I'm a large contributor. But yeah, it's like, I know what you're saying. Usually there is like a guy who is like, okay, this dude is clearly, you know, it's basically the singer and his band. You know?
Yeah. I mean, of course the cliche is just, well, there's the lead singer and that's all anybody cares about. Right. But the more technical the music gets, the less that is necessarily true sometimes.
Yeah.
And then is the singer the main songwriter? And then by the time the music's more technical and less singer songwritery, it's like, well, every band's got a pretty different formula for how things come together. So there's a lot of room for
with Invent. It's always felt like everyone is the star in a way, you know, where it's just everyone's kind of treated equally and given equal, equal kind of spotlight, I guess. But I think that has a little bit to do with kind of the niche we're in and kind of the subgenre too, as well.
Yeah, well, let's try to triangulate all the way into the subgenre, the broader culture, the genre culture, and then your band's culture. I mentioned Fit for a King and Invent Animate as far as you have, you know, you're in both and get to have that perspective of both. But just to go all the way as we drill into these narrow genre stuff, because I'm kind of interested in definitions and the values and the principles behind all these worlds. Right. But it's all under heavy music. To me, like, heavy music is a pretty easy category for just people in general that are alternative or outsiders. Like, it's like everybody on earth likes music, I think. You know, I think you can find the most bitterest old man in the world that doesn't like anything, and you'll catch him whistling a tune. You know, so music is for every person. And then heavy music is still a gigantic amount of us that love heavy music or whatever. But just from the broadest point of view, what is music about? Why music? What is special about music and heavy music?
Music in general, I think the way that I look at music is that it gives you a voice and gives other people a voice. It's kind of like that. That's always what I'm asking when I'm writing something. It's like, what am I trying to say, really? Like, because you can convey an emotion or an expression through a riff or a drum fill, you know. So it's always like, what is this part trying to get across, you know?
How literal can you be about a drum fill? About what am I trying to say?
Dude, I know that sounds silly, but like the other day, Keaton and I were writing, a drum beat, and it started to get probably a little too technical for the part because it was supposed to be kind of like a laid back, kind of a backbeat with like a vocal driven part. And the drums started to get a little too technical, and I was thinking like, maybe we should pull back on that. Like, I told Keaton, like, that sounds cool, but like, would Dave Grohl play that? You know, like, sometimes you gotta like strip things back to let the energy speak for itself, or especially given, you know, if someone's literally saying something, like the vocals on top of it, that's obviously kind of primary at that moment. So sometimes it's about what you're not saying too, you know what I mean? Choosing when to speak and not to speak, if you will, like mentally. So I don't know, just trying to, like, it's more about the energy that's coming across, you know, like
the energy that comes across when you play or don't play something, technical or not technical or whatever it is, does say something. It does say that the energy is some type of tangible pattern, something that comes across that the listener at least knows, some, like on some level that connects, like what your intent was can be received in the context that it's in. Like there, I, you know, it's hard to put words to it, which is why I think that's one of the reasons why music is cool, is because you communicate so much without words. So it's pretty goofy when you try to put words to it, but yeah, it's, you know, it's still fascinating to that. There is the intent always comes back to that thing you're saying. It's like, what am I saying with this guitar lick or whatever, but somehow it is saying something.
Yeah. And you're familiar with like worship music, right? Like, contemporary worship, like, you know, there's a lot that those types of songs say, like in the way that they're structured, you know, when there's this after the second chorus everything drops out and like the chord changes are different, and it turns into this like low build thing, and it's like, okay, this is the part where everyone gets emotional, you know what I mean? So it's there's definitely a lot to like how the songs are structured and what's playing and what's not playing. It's like giving things like their spotlight at different times and creating that atmosphere, you know.
Yeah, something like the language of emotion or something like that. Like it's how people have the same emotions or communicate them through sound, not words, or something like that. But worship music is a good example. When it becomes super predictable, then it's like, okay, I almost could put words to what you're doing here. This, like, that's too on the nose. Movies are the same way, like when, like, music in horror movies or whatever, or you know, when you could feel music being overly manipulative or something in some way. Movies are guilty of that a lot, I think.
Yeah, like any movie trailer you watch has got like loud noises and pounding drums every downbeat, and so it's just designed to make you like amped and build tension and release over and over again, you know. So it's,
yeah, tension, like, and release. Yeah,
I kind of see music that way though. It's like how, you know, it is trying to manipulate people. Like, it's like, how do I make you feel what I want you to feel? Like,
yes.
If I can't do that, if I'm not succeeding at that, then I kind of miss the mark, you know?
Okay. So manipulative is maybe not the right total word there, but it is, if it's okay. So maybe it's all manipulative in a sense that you want to express. So you're manipulating the sound to manipulate the person's emotions so that the thing you express, they actually feel. However, it is important that there's novelty to it or surprise. If it's predictable, then it's like, I think the predictability is where I use that word manipulative. It's like, it's so predictable that something's wrong with it. It has to be surprising. So you have to be exploring new, you have to be saying something new. That's what that circles back to.
Yeah, and manipulative definitely has like a bad connotation with it. But I just mean that, like, you know, we have an intention with what we're writing. We know what the song's about. Like, we know what kind of subject matter is going to like fit that atmosphere, at the very least. Like, even if we haven't gotten to vocals or lyrics yet, and so like, we build the song to like make sure that those moments can really be like felt, and the dynamics are there, and it feels like, if everything's kind of like in a movie or whatever, where you're setting up the climax of the film or whatever, like if there's no climax of the movie, you leave just thinking like, what did I just watch? Like that was so boring. It all felt like it led up to nothing, you know, like, And we kind of try to take that approach where we're like, we try to be like as cinematic as we can, without it feeling contrived, I guess.
Yeah. So worship music and cinema, but those are both very extremes. And again, it's just sometimes they're cheesy or whatever. They're not new enough. But what you do is this hyper exploration of like new territory and extreme elements that really do feel new or over the boundary of, and stuff like that. So let's try to wade into the language for the genres and stuff. I know people don't love to be labeled as genres, but I'm fascinated by the values of the different subcultures of the subcultures all the way down to the band level. So if we start at heavy music, then right away we got metal, and I think metal comes up pretty quick, and progressive are at least two of the main sub things of heavy music that you guys have going on. What do you find in those words that you resonate with, metal and progressive or prog?
Metal, I mean, I've always resonated with like the energy associated with that word. Like when I was like 12 or a little younger, coming home, I would put in like a Metallica VHS tape of like their live show from Seattle in 89, and it just has the most like driving, like chaotic, like it's just so heavy and thrashy, and the energy just seems like, if I could go back to any show like in time, I would go to that one, because it seemed like it was this moment, this moment of time that will like perhaps never be recreated or surpassed in a sense. So
But you could play, your band could play that music today, but it wouldn't be the same because it was new then.
I think so. It's like the spectacle of it, and it was new, and Metallica was like the heaviest thing on earth, and everyone was just like rabid dogs, like. In the audience, like it'll show people in the crowd, and they just are freaking out, like eyes rolling in the back of their head, like making like crazy faces, and probably under the influence of a lot of things. But just like that energy, when I was watching those tapes, as an impressionable, musically curious 12-year-old, they like just really captured me. And so that energy, I think, is still kind of like applies to metal across the board. And
So the metal values there are like to be heavy and faster and like more as past things that you've heard before, like faster, heavier, what else?
sometimes it's not necessarily faster, but just like intensity, like those highs and lows, like building something to a crescendo, or just again like a climax of this super heavy part, which is usually in like a metal core song, which is like we're in that umbrella. In a metal core song, it's like a breakdown usually, and that's the part where people go nuts and start hitting each other and get vibing. So
Because metal itself doesn't necessarily isn't the breakdown thing. That comes from hardcore, and then we get the metalcore is the blend of those two.
And so like that, I think that's what metal is to me. It's like that intensity. The way I describe metal to people that like, if they learn what kind of band I'm in, and I'm like, yeah, it's kind of like a screaming, hollering type of band, and they're like, oh, I don't know how people like that. It seems like a bunch of noise. And the analogy I always use is like spicy food. Like the first time you try something with some super hot sauce on it, it's like miserable and you hate it. But if you like keep trying it, you kind of get acclimated to it. It's not as bad anymore, and you actually grow to like crave it, you know? And it's that intensity. Like sometimes you're eating a food like that's a little, not even bland, but just you're like, I kind of want like a little kick right now, you know? And that's kind of what I think metal is. Like that's how I think it grows on people. It's so like shocking at first and intense. And maybe not pleasant for like the mainstream ear, but as you get into it more, it's like it becomes this kind of acquired taste, and nothing really matches that level of intensity after, you know, there's nothing that replaces hot sauce, you know.
Yeah, I can see that for metal. And then hardcore, so metalcore itself is just this genre, this thing that's just become so huge. And it's the blend of those two things. But what is hardcore that isn't metal? What's exclusive to hardcore on its own before you merge the two together? And you know, what isn't? What do you guys do that is not hardcore? If that makes sense, as a question.
I guess what's like from my understanding of hardcore, it's kind of like lacking the vocally melodic side that metal is kind of known for, especially like back in the day, like, you know, Iron Maiden and Metallica and stuff. Like they're all singing, you know, no one's really screaming. So hardcore kind of introduces like the yelling, shouting, screaming type of vocal, I think, and like the breakdowns, and like it's kind of a departure from the melodic side into a more rhythmically driving thing. That's kind of how I look at it, because I view metal, especially like older metal like that, is like super super melodic, you know. And like you can even kind of hear sometimes some classical influence or whatever. So
hardcore is just like right to the point. It's definitely still intense, but it's more about aggression and just like hardcore is like less, it's maybe less, I don't want to say less musical, but less notes, less progressive, less of that stuff. It's more about whatever is just making you feel the aggression directly.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the rhythmic aspect is huge to that. I think that that's probably something that those kind of bands figured out is like, man, we don't have to like shred all over our guitars. Like it feels good when we're just playing like a four on the floor beat with some chugs.
And,
you know what I mean? Cause we had rhythm, you know, as humans, we had rhythm before we had instruments that could do melodic things. You know,
we
could like stomp our feet and clap our hands, and you know, we've always been able to do rhythmic things, and of course we vocalized before that, but before like anyone was really figuring out scales or like anything like
way
that,
back.
Definitely just putting some animal skin over a, you know, and letting it rip. So
yeah, think of how early, before somebody was singing some technical song and trying to play music all well, that people were banging on drums and screaming and marching into war with those two elements. Like,
yeah.
That's very old. So yeah. It's like that. And then this hardcore, it kind of kicks off with the punk thing too, which is also not about being virtuoso at your music. Like punk is like, well, I can't play anything, but I can communicate, you know? And then that evolves into where they find these breakdowns that really make people go insane. Like, in the room where people are just losing it. Yeah, and then so, you combine that with a metal.
It's so primitive. Like, you know, like hearing, I've been playing this game, this game where you're like a Japanese like ninja. And there's just a lot of like in the soundtrack, there's like pounding war drums and stuff like that. And this was, you know, way back before it's set in like, way back in the day, but it's like it's so primitive, and that had to be like the scariest thing ever if you were like sitting, you know, sitting in a line of your fellow soldiers, and like over a hill comes this like sea of people that are just pounding drums and like shouting, you know what I mean? Like there's something so like sick about that. It's It just kind of gets you stirred up. And, you know, those people did that to like both intimidate their opponent, but also like amp themselves up and like encourage themselves to fight.
Yeah, the coordination involved. Like, we all know this rhythm. We all know this pattern. We're doing this together. Nobody can stop us. The confidence is so high. Like, it's just here it is. Here it is. Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. That's a really cool way to just get into metalcore, is that very simple primal, and then this, both are very intense and aggressive on that side. And then the metal has this, that whatever that is about, that's difficult to play or pretty singing, even like that, that, you know, some of metal has that operatic singing somehow can fit into it. And that really expressive, decorative or even beautiful qualities to it.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, like, getting into the progressive part, like, that might be, I don't really view our band as like a prog band per se, like, because we typically are pretty straightforward as far as, we have some things that are really hard to play, but honestly, they're all in 4/4. And we're not changing keys or time signatures at will. And we're not trying to confuse anybody. We're kind of just doing, what we think sounds cool. And sometimes that's a little shreddy or intense or sounds a little bit musically tricky, but, yeah, I mean, I can't really think of a song where we like depart from 4/4, unless it's like an added couple bars at the end of a section or just whatever. But
yeah, I guess I wasn't thinking. I mean, yeah, I would. It, to me, the music seems complicated. Like, I'm like, wow, that's complicated. That would be hard to learn, that kind of thing. But I can see what you mean. It's like you're painting with different. You're not using some of that overly technical stuff that is often in everything. Yeah, key changes and time signature changes. Let's look at a song specifically, like Shade Astray. Give us a description of what that, how that's put together, and why you think it works, because that one seems to be doing really well.
It's structured, I would say, pretty contemporarily, like pop, you know, like off the top of my head, from what I can, I'm kind of like playing through the song in my head. I think it's just kind of like verse, chorus, breakdown, bridge, chorus.
All 4/4.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Same key.
And it's very difficult to play on guitar and drums, especially, and the vocals are really hard to sing, but yeah, it's all 4/4, and like there's tricky stuff in there. There's things on upbeats and thing, you know, like I said, it's that's more about the level of like intricacy,
yeah,
rather than like actually departing into something where we're like kind of making this. Like, I don't know. When I think of progressive, I think of like Dream Theater,
right?
Who will like they'll depart from vocals entirely for like 3 minutes, mm-hmm. and just do instruments and kind of show off, mm-hmm. and then come back to vocals later. We don't do that, you know. Like we try to make room for vocals all the time, because we feel like, back to that primal thing, like I think vocals are what, you know, most people listen to. It's what the human ear is like kind of tuned to. And yeah, it's what 90% of people, I think, hear first are vocals. So we try to make as much room for that as we can.
Yeah, I think that's key, because it's like most people are going to connect with the vocal, and you got to keep that centered, and you got to keep that to hang the whole thing together. But the setting and context you have gives all these illusions of I mean, maybe even fantasy is one word, but it's like another, some other context and world where it's weird and technical and intricate. Like it feels foreign, as you know, it feels like a alien world in which this vocal is here taking me on the journey.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we try not to keep it too out there, because even we get lost, like, because we're not, again, like, we don't really think of ourselves as prog musicians, and there's not a lot of prog bands that we listen to, so when it kind of gets, when it starts to stray too far into that territory, we get scared and like
you know, to pull it back. Yeah,
if we go too far out there, we won't be able to figure out how to get back. So
how then do you think about it when you're writing songs? How do you get to the place where you're writing stuff that's very difficult to play? Because to me, it seems like, I mean, I have that battle too. Like, I overcomplicate it and make things too hard to play. But at the end of the day, it's the things that are easy to play that usually work out better anyway. And I can't play any of that kind of stuff that y'all do. So how do you get into the place where you're writing something that's difficult to play? How do you find your way out there in the first place?
Man, I think it comes from just our backgrounds with, like, when we got into metalcore, it was kind of we were influenced by things other than metalcore too. Like, we were listening to, especially as younger people, we were listening to deathcore and death metal and different things like that. So, like, for me with drums, for example, like, I was taking stuff that I heard in death metal bands and wanting to do that, and be like, which I didn't really hear, like, it happens a lot more now, but I think when we started, like, I wasn't hearing a lot of metal core bands doing like blast beats and like super fast double kicks and stuff like that. That was more reserved for like super, you know, deathcore and death metal bands. So I don't know. I was so interested and intrigued by that energy that I kind of wanted to bring some of that in, which is more it's difficult to play.
It's the more extreme elements from these other subgenres that you pull in, and just like you start by imitating, see if, can I play this BPM, a blast beat or whatever.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. It's just all born out of like curiosity kind of, and just hearing it and being like, dang, that's so sick. That sounds really hard to play. Let me see if I can play it. And you know, it's like when you're on guitar or drums, it's like you're covering a band or something. You're just trying to play one of their songs, but then you start to like get a feel for like,
I see. Yeah.
Like the first time I figured out tapping on guitar, it was super, super hard and foreign to me. I was like, wait, I have to use my right hand on the fretboard now? Like, that doesn't make sense. But then as I got the hang of it, I was like, okay, I can kind of do this. And then like Keaton and I kind of figured out like, oh, if you just like make a chord with your left hand like usual, and then use your right hand to tap notes that are in key, like you can tap on multiple strings and like kind of just mute the strings as you go to make it really cool and string skippy sound. I don't know. So we kind of just figured out a thing that our ears kind of gravitated to and that we liked, and that just kind of became a part of our sound out of really just being curious and young and like
exploring and playing and all that is part of it. It's different than hearing. So there's maybe a line that is crossed, or and it's not a strict line, but there's like a territory out there where you're exploring things that you don't hear first. You're just doing them, and then you hear what they sound like, and then you keep cultivating that. So it's a slower process than like hearing some in your head and then kind of finding the notes.
Yeah, like at some point, I think especially when we got to the point where we're able to work inside of a recording program like Logic or whatever, mm-hmm. and kind of play back an idea instantly, then we were really able to like really able to like sit there and be like, okay, note by note, this is exactly how I want this to sound. So like, even if I can't play this right now, I'm going to build it. And then like, I'll figure out how to play it later and I'll get good at that. But like, I know this is how I want it to sound. So I'm just going to make sure that it sounds that way.
So the software is a huge component to this whole world. And you could say
it's been a big part, I would say, especially as of like the past two albums. Cause I actually didn't really get savvy with, like I work in Logic Pro. I didn't really get savvy with Logic until the pandemic hit. That was kind of like the big thing I kind of dove into, tried to teach myself over the pandemic. But like for, you know, the new record, we got pretty good at it and we like recorded all of our own guitars and I did like the majority of the sound design and ambience and atmosphere and electronic stuff like all myself. And Caleb, the bass player, also added some ambience and sound design, but it's like all in the box, you know, like we just kind of did it all ourselves and sent that off to be mixed. So it's like it's been a super helpful tool, like just learning how to like build and create that atmosphere and then writing music over that.
That's really lighting up my mind in that it's you know, so that's fundamentally different than like the thing where you just get in a room together and hear something and try it. To get it to sound right in a room kind of can follow what you can do in software because you can iterate and experiment way more rapidly with a drum sequencer. You know, you can say, you could hear what it would sound, these notes would sound like at that tempo, and then you can just you know, use the pencil tool to see what might be possible, you know, and then later you can learn it. That's kind of revolutionary as far as expanding into new territory that wouldn't be possible in a rehearsal space. Your ears and everything else would just fatigue out.
Yeah, you can literally just click in notes and like, if it sounds cool, you just leave it, you know, and then you don't want to mess up your flow state, you know, so you leave it and you keep going and then you figure out how to play it later. Cause if you try to dumb it down or change it later to something a little more basic, like a lot of times for me, I'll be like, I actually missed, like, I liked the original thing we did that sounded a little, you know, something that I wouldn't usually play, but it sounded cool there, you know? So I just figured out how to play it. And like, that's happened so much, I think, for such a long time that there's certain feels and stuff that have become really like almost part of my, like, definitely like a part of my style, I would say.
Your vocabulary.
Yeah. And like if a band asked me to write drums for them, there would undoubtedly be like a lot of that just littered throughout. And that, like, and weirdly, that's what they would want, right?
That's why they asked you.
Yeah, and which is weird because again, that just kind of feels like organic and accidental, just like clicking stuff in from a young age and being like, that sounds cool. I can't play it right now, but I'll figure it out. And like, eventually those kinds of things become things you're a little bit known for, which is weird.
So you're really getting close to the term you said, sound design, is part of this. And one thing that's really cool about that is the format in which you're creating it, in the computer, in the box, coming back on your speakers or your headphones, is so much. It's already multiple steps closer to the way a consumer hears it, versus we're going to write this thing, going to play this instrument, going to amplify the instrument, going to record the instrument, then try to get it into a computer that then can then get to another person's ears through other computers and unpack it back in physical acoustic space. Like, you're getting closer and closer to the user in the creation of the thing. So that's like, I mean, it's kind of scary almost. It's like you're getting closer and closer to the brain of the, like, you know, your brains are closer together than that whole, you know, old school process.
Yeah. And like, yeah. It's definitely a long way than like tracking on tape and, you know, and just kind of like overdub or whatever. But like, I try to, you know, I'm always trying to like get better at mixing too. That's not really something I wouldn't say I'm a mixing engineer by any means, but I could see myself doing that one day. And so I kind of try to pride myself on having like the best demos like possible. Like I want it to sound basically finished and kind of scary good, like you were saying, which can be, that's like a double-edged sword, because like, you know, sometimes I'll mix something and have, it can be a little thing like the snare is coming through a certain way or whatever it is, and then you get it mixed by someone else and you're like, oh, I kind of miss this about my mix, because it's not, it doesn't even mean it's better, you're just used to it. And you have like, I think demoitis is what a lot of people use for that. But
the process is so continuous from demo to final now, it's just different. It's like it's almost is finished. Like your demo sessions become the final sessions anyway. It's not like some demo where you have a handheld tape recorder and you listen back and say, hey, that was cool. It's like you the you know, everybody has access to your original demo session all the way through the process. So it's like you can kind of pick and choose.
And to me, it's just way easier to like be able to tell, you know, like another thing we do is the car test, you know, where we write something and then we bounce it and go listen to it in the car, because you kind of instantly get a new perspective as like a listener, as like an audience, rather than like I'm making this thing. And just when it sounds good and finished, you don't have to imagine anything, like especially when it comes to vocals being laid over it and stuff like that. Like, yeah, just like imagine these vocals but with tuning, and they sound better and it's louder, you know what I mean? Like, we don't want to have to do a bunch of guesswork to figure out if an idea works, you know. We want it to be pretty black and white, which is I think why it's been really helpful to get kind of savvy with this stuff.
Another element that's right in that pocket, especially when you say sound design, is ambient. So there's like definitely this thing where you have this super present, the intensity from metal that you described, the just the all of that stuff is there, and it's just right in your face. The kick drum, I love the bass tone, when the bass tone in the kick drum, that dirty bass where it just, but it's just in my, it's right between my eyes. And so when you, it's so present and so attacky and so slappy or whatever, those, that so much attack, so much pick, just so much, it's just right in my eardrums. It's crazy. And then all of a sudden it's like, and there's infinity of depth now to play with, as this landscape that's like actually wide open for depth. That seems to be a big component.
Totally. Yeah. Like ambience is like, I don't know. It's like ambience for Invent Animate is like a kid finding out about cuss words and they can't quit.
I love it.
I mean, like we just found out that we could kind of do it in our music and add like really delayed and reverbed out leads and pads and different things to kind of just wash under everything and sit and add that depth, like you said, and just add this like other dimension that we were just like, oh, it's game over. Like this is what movies are to us, or this is what like soundtracks to, like, you know, we like take influence sometimes from things like the newer Blade Runner movie and things like that, where there's just ambience washed under everything. There's a lot more examples like that.
Yeah, but it's such a clear element, and it's so, I mean, from my point of view, just I'm old and I've just seen trends come and go and pendulum swing and stuff like that. And there's been times where it's like, the reverbs and the delays and that kind of stuff has been so annoying and bad and not, it doesn't work, or you're already fighting all these different room sounds or whatever it is anyway, that you're just trying to get more and more present. Like that, it seems like the trend for a long time was to try to get more and more present. And as that has been achieved, all of a sudden people forgot about depth. It's like, wait, there's all this territory to play with now in depth that everybody just kind of forgot about on their quest for crunchiness and punch and everything else. And somehow now our ears had a break from that or something, and it just feels so good. It's like, there it is. It's wide open. So, you know, you keep finding these pockets maybe by just pursuing the extremes of everything that wind up leaving these new empty pockets for that play, you know, play space.
Yeah. And that just felt like, again, when we were kind of young and just kind of figured out our style a little bit, it just felt like cheat codes for us.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Is that like that automatically just basically creates your dynamics in your song, like for us at least, like it was a cheat code to creating dynamics to where we were like,
because soft and loud kind of got, you know,
yeah.
You're right. Cause that's another thing. Cause it used to be soft and loud and then everything's loud, but now there's, that's
yeah,
right. So like it's dynamics in a new way.
Yeah. Just being like, we're going to do really heavy parts, but we're going to go like way softer than anyone. So then like when the heavy part does happen, it feels crazy heavy, but it's really because we just created this big, these hills and valleys, you know?
Yeah.
So that's been like definitely from day one has been just a part of our identity, really, is like ambience. And like that might be the thing that lumps us into, I think it's that, like that and the technical guitar riffs that people tend to put us in the prog metalcore territory, but it might just be that simply because the ambience is a little bit different than a lot of people do it.
Well, it gives the landscape quality, and it's all of a sudden it sounds like a cohesive universe, like I'll say on an alien planet or something science fiction or fantasy. It's like it seems so cohesive at that point. It doesn't sound like a band in a room. It sounds like a soundtrack from something.
Yeah. It's like, it's totally like, I kind of view it the same way as you're saying, like a landscape, you know, where it's like, if you look at a, you know, someone painting a picture of a landscape, you've got the really clear things in the foreground, like you were saying, like the vocals and guitars that are just like tickling your eardrums because they're so in your face. But like in a landscape painting like that, you know, for example, sometimes you see a mountain in the background that's so like fuzzy and grayed out, you can barely see it, but it's there, you know, and it's adding a lot of like complexity and depth to the image.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of how we use ambience, I would say.
And sometimes you just sit in that space, like the song Reverie, if I'm saying it right, like it's just got, you know, within the context of a whole album, you can spend real time just in ethereal space sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. And we love to sit there. Cause I mean, we're fans of stuff like that, like way more than like the prog thing, for example. So that's built into our sound just a ton, because we like in our spare time we do listen to a fair bit of metal. There's a lot of metal bands that will be like, oh, I don't really listen to metal, and like they'll cool guy you and act like they're too cool for metal or something. But we definitely listen to metal, but we love like ambient music too.
Can you give me any insight into that track,
into Reverie?
Yeah.
Open my eyes, see myself in you, never wanted to bathe myself in blue, colored in the light, darkest in the day, left my soul with stains, hardly made it through.
That's actually one that Caleb, the bass player, he kind of built that song out, on the ambient side. And it originally did have this build at the end and like kind of this breakdown part, but we actually decided to cut it, and it just felt like superfluous. And especially by the time we were kind of putting it together with the album, it felt like a good spot to break up some of like the heavier songs in the album and like create just a better flow where you're like, we don't want to like give you ear fatigue, you know, like we want to create dynamics to where you get like a little bit of a break in a way. And it's like, that doesn't mean we're just trying to cop out of writing a full song or like, kind of a half-assed song, you know, like we definitely view that as like a cool song. I really like that song because it's very different for us, and it like I think the contrast it creates with the album is cool. But it was supposed to be kind of a regular song per se, but we just decided that it wasn't the vibe. Like the vibe was to just really lean into the ambience aspect, you know.
Yeah. And then the last track, Elysium, is a pretty cool one too. What's special about that one to you?
That one, I think what's special about that song to me is it feels like in my head, as far as like kind of our checklist of writing or like things we want to, like what we endeavor to do in writing and the emotions we're trying to make people feel and like what we want to express and convey, that feels like a very truly invent animate song. Like it's got like the extremes of everything. It's got like really heavy parts, but it also has like super beautiful parts. And like it's got this big build and this like pretty I don't know, the outro and like the way the last chorus comes in with like the drum beat is way more open and the ambience opens up. It just feels like super climactic and almost like story ending to me. What I lost was my I don't know, like I'm proud of the way that song, like I'm proud of like how we executed each part of that song.
Because you knew it had to go last, or did you write it for that, like it came out that way and it's like, oh, that belongs last? Or
we didn't write it with the intention of being last. I think it was just that feeling, like everything I just described is like, this is like, this song as a closer just feels like very invent, and I think it leaves people with like knowing exactly who we are.
Nice. And,
it's emotional and it's vocally and lyrically it's talking about something super important too, and it felt like just a good note to leave the album on. But I don't know, it's just like, yeah, I'm just proud of like how each part kind of said what we wanted to say in it, you know.
Awesome. Well, the album is just, you know, it's very cool. It's cohesive, and it sounds like the band knows what the band is, just like you're describing there. I think that's part of why it's resonating with people. So, you know, good work on. I just wanted to get some insight into how you thought about it, put together, and why things that are working. You know, that's just fascinating to me. And you're still coming out of this scene. What's the deal with Texas and heavy music and all of this stuff? It's a lot of connections there. It's just like its own. Is there something special about the, how does that all connect?
I don't know. Cause I mean, like there, when we were kind of coming up as a band, we live close to Houston, and that was kind of our home scene, even though it was like an hour and a half away from us, a couple hours. That was the closest thing to like hometown that we had. And it was actually like when we were playing local shows and stuff, it was predominantly like just run by super heavy, like slam bands, like very down tempo, like guttural deathcore type of stuff, you know? And we would always feel like super oddball out, you know, when we played shows with them and stuff, cause we would have singing and like none of those other bands would have anything that was singy or really melodic at all. So At a time it was definitely that, but then like in other places and like Dallas and stuff, there were more like of the what you would kind of recognize as like standard metalcore bands, and Fit for a King was coming up at that time, and we were kind of like looking up to them and some other bands like that. But it felt we felt a little bit isolated, like we didn't really feel like a part of a lot of that, because Texas is so big and we were so far from that, that we only really got to participate in stuff like that when we did like some of the Texas festivals and things like that. But
Still something in the whole culture there of Texas that is shared. I don't know how to put a finger on it, but it's Texas, has produced a lot of really interesting heavy music, over time for sure.
yeah, it might just be that it's so big as a state that naturally it's like really diverse. Of course, like we're kind of stereotyped as like everybody rides their horse to school or whatever. But no, I mean we've got big metro cities and we've got like big populations, and Houston has the worst traffic of all time because there's millions of people there, and yeah, I think it's just naturally like a lot of like good music comes out of places that are like really diverse like that, and have like a lot of cultural influence, and people just from a younger age get more perspective and whatever, which is like I'm saying all this, but where a lot of us grew up, like specifically like speaking especially for like Keaton and I, and Caleb lived in Texas for a lot of his growing up as well, like we didn't live in those like metro areas or anything, where like I said, I'm an hour and a half from Houston, and like pretty small town that I would not call diverse by any means. And but I mean, that's where the internet comes in, right? Where it's like you're in high school and you're on YouTube 24/7, and finding like seeing new music videos, and I'm looking at guitar magazines, and like you just like the world, I think the world was pretty big to us at a young age. And so we were just, I mean, we felt, I think that's the culture that we felt a part of more than like a local scene or anything. We felt like so plugged into like what metalcore was becoming as like its own culture, I think. 'Cause that feels like, when something's so niche like that, it kind of naturally brings people together. And like if you go to school, especially where we live, you go to school and you happen to see another person wearing a band t-shirt that you're like, oh dude, like I didn't know anyone else liked that, like it's like really rare. So yeah, it feels like yeah, it does feel like a special shared thing when you actually find people that are like-minded.
Well, tell me about the Fit for a King connection. How'd you make it? And then, how's this unfold that you become the Fit for a King drummer? I mean, and at this point where there's such a influential and big band. I had a conversation with Ryan Kirby that was really, I really enjoyed.
Yeah. We knew of them just, like both being from Texas, and they were actually having like a pretty good come up, I think, when we were starting our band. And I think we played a couple festivals with them and some different like one-off shows with them. I remember playing a show with them in like Springfield, Missouri, when we were really young. That's when I very first met them, and kind of just like remained, followed each other on social media, remained somewhat close, and like there was a point where Bob, the guitar player, he got married, and he had a kid, and there kind of came to a point where he was like, I kind of need to be at home with my family. And so like I'm gonna start kind of transitioning into this guitar player producer role at home, which ironically that's what I am to invent now. But you know, I'm gonna transition here. Like, do you want to fill in for me on guitar for this tour, this couple tours? So that was just one tour at first, and it turned into like a couple of them. And then I did those two, and they actually asked me to join like as a member playing guitar. And at the time I was like I felt like I had too much work to do and too much that I hadn't really seen come to fruition for Invent that I wanted to just put more into and see payoff and stuff. So at the time I said no. And then like later their drummer was in a similar situation where he was like kind of transitioning to another band and asked me to fill in, and I did that. And then the, you know, band eventually asked me to join. So this time I said yes, because in the circumstance, there was just like a lot that had happened. Invent went through a really hard time. Like even before COVID, Invent had its own COVID, so to speak, because we lost our old vocalist. And so we had this whole long, like 2 year process of finding a new guy and trying to connect with him and like recording an album. And there was just like, there was kind of a hiatus, you know, for a while, for like about 2 years, I would say. And then we finally got on our first tour back, and then COVID happened. And so that was another 2 years. And so like, you know, just where I was in my life and not having a job, you know, nothing that was making me money. And, you know, I was like trying to work at home and work at Guitar Center and different things like that. I was laying floors with Keaton a lot. We would put floors down in houses. But yeah, I was just at a point in my life where like that was a lot of, you know, I'm sure you've heard from a lot of artists like that. That was a mentally tough time for a lot of like touring musicians, and definitely left a lot of people in kind of like an identity crisis and really just struggling to know what they were going to do. So the Fit for a King offer kind of came at a time where, the best way I can put it, it is like, it was the best way for me to continue being a valuable contributing member to Invent without being burnt out and feeling defeated by circumstantial things, and still be able to do something that I love and gives me joy and energy and actually gives me the capacity to continue contributing to music.
Yeah.
Because I think honestly, like if Fit for a King wouldn't have come along, I probably would not be an Invent anymore. I probably would have called it quits, because I was just kind of at the end of my rope. It was like, it was so, you know, that 4 year hiatus, basically, you know, like I call it like a 4 year COVID where other people had a 2 year COVID. Yeah, it was just hard. It was hard to sit through and try to navigate through and work with no payoff. And yeah, so that's where I was. And I think Fit for a King kind of like saved me from that, which I'm super grateful for. And now I feel like it can have a little bit of like the best of both worlds, where I still get to tour and stuff, but like I'm not really one of there's a lot of people that tour and they like live for the moment where they get to play live, like that 30, 45 hour, you know, long time where they're playing in front of people. They just get this like fix, you know. I've never really been like that. I don't really know what it is about me or my personality or whatever I'm wired like, but where I get my fix is like the actual creating. Like I love I love having an idea in my head and then putting it on paper, so to speak, you know, putting it in Logic and then seeing it come alive and then like hearing it back on an album. That's what like gets me going, you know? So that's, I don't know. I feel like I'm getting to like really do what I love in like, honestly, probably like a little bit more refined way, because Fit for a King's kind of got its own, they already have their own dynamic where like in Fit for a King, Bob is me, if that makes sense. Like the guitar player producer, he's got like the role that I do, where he's at home writing songs and like trying to craft these things. So I feel like I can kind of like do my job and do my role with Fit for a King and just all like not all but a lot of my creative capacity can actually be kind of like funneled into Invent, you know, if that makes sense. I feel like I just have a lot like a much wider mental margin now than I did like a couple of years ago.
It seems like you have been able to break out of the, you know, for some old patterns with the circumstance caused it and opportunity. And you have, because you at the beginning of the convo, you said that you let go of some stuff to, you know, bring on the producer and get help in that way. And then at the same time, you know, are able to contribute in a whole nother system. So you're able to be... There's something fascinating about being interchangeable, having interchangeable creators that share enough background in their genres and worlds and language and have enough trust where you can participate in multiple systems in unique ways instead of just being one thing to one group. That seems like a trend that's also, it's kind of like modular, like software or anything else. It's like people can configure their minds for certain creative tasks. And, you know, there's like this whole different landscape of being performer, writer, producer, collaborator. There's all these different skills that you can, it's not one or the other. You can participate in multiple systems and learn from each other and bring them back into, you know, because I think the two bands help each other. I think, you know, it's obviously a lot of overlap effects that even though you can't do everything, you know, it just seems like that's a win-win all around.
Yeah. And we're in the same general, you know, umbrella. We're both metalcore bands and there are like a ton of overlapping fans. And I think, you know, there were people that it was hard to hear the news that I'm not going to tour with Invent, but like, that's kind of the way I try to reassure people is what I told you, just saying kind of like I get it, and I also am super grateful and thankful for like how loyal you are and how much you actually care and are invested, but just trying to reassure them like this is actually a good thing, and this was like, as far as what I can contribute, this is the best thing that could have happened for Invent. Because
it gives you more wind in your sail, like you said. It brings outside perspective back in from another system. I imagine it's there's a funding element to that. Like, if you don't mind me asking, like they made you a member. They tour, I'm sure, profitably, and it's like that helps you be able to do the other project as it starts to rise up as well. It seems like, and the other thing about that is you. You identified that playing live isn't your absolute favorite thing anyway. So that makes a unique combination.
Yeah. And it totally like the financial aspect helped. And like I, you know, have invested a lot of that and redirected that into like tools that help me be creative, you know, stuff. And, you know, like my desk studio set up here and, just like all the like software and plugins and all that stuff, you know, I always reinvest that because that's like that's what I'm passionate about doing. But yeah, it's I'm sorry, I missed, you said something else that I wanted to touch on. Maybe it was about, I don't know. What was the other side of the question you asked at the end?
I don't remember exactly, but it's sticking out to me that you are able to give part, like the not liking playing live as much, so you can focus on this, and then you're getting resources. It's like you're getting resources from one place and creating value there, and then spreading around, and you probably have other things you'll want to do now that you like you're more connected in the world of a professional musician creator. That's gonna seems like it's gonna keep going, and you'll probably find newer and newer opportunities because you look at it in some. This is a non-traditional way of like problem solving.
Right. Yeah. And you know, like I wouldn't say money is happiness or moneyness is freedom, but it definitely gives you some flexibility. Right. You know, so it's definitely helped me be a little more flexible and able to do things where I would usually be like, dude, I just simply can't go or make it there. Or to whatever you need me to do, because I just simply don't have money. Like, you know, things like that. I can make some stuff work now. So that's a big thing, is just flexibility. And obviously, you know, we were in a 4-year like hiatus essentially. And you know, being broke for that amount of time can definitely put some mental stress on you, you know, and especially when we're toward the end of it, I got engaged, and like my first tour back from COVID, I got engaged and had been planning that. And so you're thinking about like having a wedding and a future and being able to provide for someone else, you know, things like that, they start adding up. And you know, so that influenced my decision as well. But yeah, I mean, like with the, I wouldn't say about your comment about like, I definitely want, I don't want anyone to get the idea that I don't like playing live, because I do.
Yeah. So I'm not trying to paint it that you don't, but yeah, sorry.
No, like I love it. And I love playing drums. I actually like as far as live performance goes, I definitely like playing drums more than guitar, for what it's worth. But like for example, with like Fit for a King's headliner that we just did, I was able to contribute like a lot of sound design, and I kind of like strung all of the songs in the set together with like different ambience and kind of ebbs and flows of things that made it feel like really continuous and created these like atmospheres for each song. And then like being able to be immersed in that live and play that live, and especially with having like a light show that was synced up to it.
Nice.
And
stuff yeah.
Like that. Like, I love that. Like,
yeah, I bet.
Like the, just being able to like, have something sonically become like a visual presentation, and this kind of whole picture, you know, like that is like so cool to me.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I mean, I always feel the same way, but just like to get to that level where Fit for a King's at, to have access to that and the lights and the timing and the resources and the crowds, I mean, I'm sure that's just an incredible incredible feeling to be able to contribute creatively to that whole experience. What is the Fit for a King song that when you play it live is the most, what is the song where it just is your favorite to play because the whole thing is happening in that special way?
Man, I don't know. There were like a couple of moments where I tried to keep the set pretty dynamic too, and like really make the ambience and the interludes like match the feel of the songs. But like there were a couple songs where I just felt like really proud of myself after like making it and integrating it, where I was just like, for the song Reaching Out, for example, I was kind of like, man, I kind of wish this was like a part of the song originally. Or like What You Left Behind, I was like really proud of the intro I made for that.
I just want to say thank you so much, as I said before, from the bottom of our hearts. we have been a band for a pretty long time, and it's always been a pretty slow crawl for us, supporting a lot of tours, opening up a lot of tours. I know a lot of you have been with there almost every step of the way. And for us to be here tonight in front of 1,000+ people is absolutely wonderful. We love all of you so much. This song goes out to North Lane.
Trying to, a Fit for a King especially tries to not have songs that are like dragging it out, you know, like try to keep things around the 4 minute mark, maybe a little shorter, 3.5 minutes, just for the attention span nowadays. Like if we didn't have that limitation, you know, if we could go up to like 5 minutes or whatever, like this is what the song should feel and sound like cinematically to me, especially in relation to the song that comes after or before, whatever it is. So it was just, it was like really gratifying to like, I guess, contribute and add something that I thought was like really valuable to songs that I already thought were like super good. And just make them like kind of an experience live. Like it kind of, I think that's what I was stoked about, was that it felt like it transcended just playing a set and became like,
yeah,
spectacle.
Yeah. Yeah. The whole one experience everybody's having together, when that occurs, you know, and can occur, is awesome. So
yeah,
that's very, very cool. It sounds like you'll have, you know, more creativity, more opportunities, you know, from here as you continue to, you know, make connections and get out there. So I'm excited for you, because you probably have a lot left to do. Maybe you're just getting started in all this.
Yeah, kind of.
When it looked like maybe it was all going to end, and now you have a whole, you know, a new perspective on the whole thing.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, it kind of does feel like I'm just getting started in a way, because Fit for a King is a sort of a new space for me. You know, like it's still a little bit of a new space where I'm finding out exactly what my role is and whatever. But so far, that has been that creative space, kind of same as Invent, has been the area where I feel like I'm able to contribute in a valuable way, you know. And so I'm excited to like explore more of that, and excited to write more songs with Invent. I mean, as much as this is going to be my inner critic coming out, but as well as like the new Invent album has been received, I was kind of surprised in a way, because it feels like it's actually breaking through and kind of reaching this new level. And in my head, I always leave, you know, an album or songs, all right, where, you know, after some time to reflect on them, I'm like, this could be better, or like I could write a better version of this song, or like, you know what I mean, there's always things I want to change, and I'm criticizing myself over, and that'll probably never change, honestly, but like it feels like a lot of people are not seeing it that way. Like I try not to focus too heavily on this little group of people, but like the metalcore Reddit thread, or sorry, the subreddit, it is like, I've seen so many people say like, this is like truly a 10 out of 10 masterpiece album, which to me is like, really, I'm like, are you sure? Like that, you know, like it feels like mind blowing to me, but it's really cool. But like it almost gives me hope in a way, because I feel like I'm always getting better and gaining new perspective, especially like lately, and feeling like, okay, I actually do have room to like impress you guys again. Like I actually do think I can write something that tops this, which awesome. Is I'm not trying to be as I said that, I realized it sounded a little bit egotistical or a little bit proud, but I don't mean it that way. It's almost like the opposite. I'm always doubting myself and I'm always criticizing what I do right. And but like lately, I feel like I've learned some things that I can kind of use well. And like, I don't know. I'm happy about the space I'm in and where I'm growing as a musician and the perspective I'm gaining. And like, I'm just excited to write more music and release more, you
Well,
know.
that's great. That's awesome. I really appreciate the time and just getting to hear how you think about it. It seems like getting the encouragement. It's like your story's interesting because a lot of times they'll be the drummer of some big band and then they'll have a side project that might then blow up. But you have this pre-side. It's not a side project. It's just that you had a band that's already, there that you had been devoted to for a long time, and now you have more and more actual feedback and encouragement from the subreddit and the place. So it's like the validation's coming now instead of leaving, having one thing going and then trying to build another thing. You already were back building this other thing that's now getting more visibility. And you ha and somehow you have both. You have both. So you find yourself in that really unique position, and it's an odd path to get where you are. So of course it's really a good thing to get that validation at this point. So I think, and then that will motivate you to put more to push yourself, over, and not just have to do it with a small, the larger audience to get more feedback. You can maybe have some good criticism that's not just your inner critic, and some good encouragement that's not just your own belief in yourself.
Yeah, that was something I kind of had to let go of with making the band change and stuff is like I don't have to have all my validation from this one thing. Like I don't have to have
That's
all my
good.
eggs in one basket.
That's a good thing.
I can have a full life where I do a lot of things that I really enjoy, and it doesn't have to be like I don't have to live or die by this one project, you know.
Well, that's not the typical path. The typical thing that happens with artists is they just are doing, they're driven to do what they do, and then if they have success, they're then unable to separate themselves from their identity from the project. But you already have this whole thing is built in a way that you're already separate from the identities of the project. So you ha like that's a better place to be in than that one where you get big and you can't separate yourself, and then you have to deal with all that and eventually learn to who am I and who is this band or whatever. So you already have those I don't know if boundaries is the right word, but you already have separation from the entities that you participate with, and seem to have them in balance, at least for now.
I mean, yeah, always trying to figure that out, you know, trying to be a band dude and a touring musician and a writer and producer and a husband and, you know, like those things. It's always a balance and trying to figure it out. But I mean, I'm super grateful and happy with where I am, and like I said, I'm excited about where things are going, and things are kind of taking off, really with both bands. And I'm just stoked. I feel like it took me a long time to feel like I had value and something that like I brought value to the community, to the metal scene. And it just feels good, you know. It feels good to create something that people have resonated with so deeply, and so I'm grateful for that.
Awesome. Well, Trey, thank you. I've enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me. It's been super cathartic. Like, I think you've asked me a lot of questions that I haven't got to think about too much or articulate. So I appreciate the very, very much below surface level question and really digging in. So I appreciate you. Thank you.
Awesome.
I said,